Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, September 21st, 2018 edition of the News Gazette. And we'll begin on the front page with a piece from the Illinois Supreme Court called Justices Uphold Hospital Tax Law. Both sides see aspects of ruling as a victory, by Deborah Pressey, Springfield. An Illinois Supreme Court ruling upholding the state's six-year-old hospital tax exemption law is being viewed as a win for both nonprofit hospitals and taxing districts, but it remains to be seen how it will play out in Carle Foundation's pending lawsuit over property taxes in Champaign County. The court on Thursday morning unanimously affirmed a first district appellate court ruling that upheld the constitutionality of the state law that created new standards for nonprofit hospitals to obtain exemptions from paying property taxes in their communities. The constitutionality of that statute was challenged the same year it took effect, in 2012, by Cook County resident Constance Oswald in a lawsuit filed against the Department of Revenue and its director. The 2012 addition to the state tax code allows hospitals seeking property tax exemptions to get them if they can show they provide at least as much charitable assistance in a given year as the property tax bills they would have had to pay. Oswald argued the law was unconstitutional because it provides for an exemption to be granted without regard to whether the hospital property satisfies a requirement in the Constitution that it be used exclusively for charitable use. The Illinois Health and Hospital Association, which was a party to the Oswald case and worked to defend the constitutionality of the state law, was pleased with the ruling. The new law has promoted the delivery of health care for low-income people, delivered a long-needed clarity for hospitals and taxing districts, and ensured that communities receive the benefit of the bargain for hospital tax exemptions, the organization contended. Taxing nonprofit hospitals would hurt the communities they serve by diverting dollars that are better used to care for patients and to upgrade equipment, modernize facilities, and hire needed staff, said A.J. Wilhelmy, the organization's president and CEO. The Supreme Court rejected a primary argument in Oswald's case that the exemption law is unconstitutional because it doesn't specifically mention state constitutional requirements along with those specified in the new statute. We presume that the legislature enacts statutes in light of the Constitution and intends to enact constitutional legislation and does not intend to exceed its constitutional limitations, said the opinion written by Justice P. Scott Neville, Jr. A hospital applicant seeking a charitable property tax exemption under the state law must document the services or activities meeting the statutory requirement, he wrote. Additionally, the hospital must show that the subject property meets the constitutional test of exclusive charitable use. The court also noted that exclusive charitable use means it is the primary purpose of the property and not the secondary or incidental purpose. Champaign County Assistant State's Attorney Joel Fletcher, who filed a friend of the court brief in the case on behalf of the county and its treasurer, also considered the court's decision to be a good one, but for another reason. In affirming the constitutionality of the state law, the court also made it clear that hospitals still have to meet the constitutional standards, he said. I think this is a very positive decision for local taxing districts because it makes it clear that hospitals have to meet both the statutory criteria for exemption and the constitutional requirement for exclusive charitable use, he said. The Supreme Court also specifically stated that applications of the state law may produce some constitutional problems that could be addressed as they arise, he said. The Supreme Court previously reviewed Carl Foundation's lawsuit with local taxing districts after the 4th District Appellate Court opinion on that case declared the tax exemption law unconstitutional. In an opinion last year, the High Court sent the Carl case back to the trial court and didn't address the constitutionality issue of the state law. Carl Foundation is also pleased with Thursday's decision. Carl has long advocated for clarity surrounding the expectations for property tax exemptions for not-for-profit health care providers. "This opinion provides that guidance," said spokeswoman Laura Mabry. "Carl will continue to serve the health care needs of the community and provide charity care that meets the community's growing need for financial assistance with health care costs." Carl provided $32.4 million in charity care at cost last year, an amount significantly above what its property taxes would be, she said. And now a piece from the CU Immigration Forum. It's called "She Sets an Example, UI Grad Student to be Honored for Efforts Supporting Fellow Immigrants," by Deborah Pressey, Urbana. Carmen Hernandez knows firsthand the challenges students from immigrant families face in getting a college education. One of her goals at the University of Illinois is to be a help to undergraduates facing the same obstacles she has, "because I was once in those shoes," she said. A graduate student in social work, Hernandez will be honored Saturday with the CU Immigration Forum's Student Leadership Award, one of five awards the organization plans to hand out in its annual ceremony. The 22-year-old Hernandez is a native of Mexico who came to the United States with her family when she was 3 years old and grew up in Chicago. She recently completed her undergraduate degree in social work at the UI and remains in the U.S. under Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, a program with a currently uncertain future. It gives some people brought into the country as children renewable extensions to remain in the U.S. along with work permits. As a DACA student, Hernandez hasn't been eligible for financial aid, she said. Her tuition bill has largely been shouldered by her parents, though she has also worked a few jobs to help. Her fear is that she and her parents will have sacrificed so much to get her through school, and she won't end up with a work permit to stay and do the work she has been trained for, Hernandez said. It's emotional stress shared by many DACA students, she said. "Not only do you constantly have to worry about finances," she said, "but how does this new law affect me?" Hernandez said she was attracted to the social work field when she became the one to help her parents with documents. "I decided I always wanted to help other people," she said. After she finishes her master's degree this year, she hopes to work with children and families in the immigrant population, she said. UI Assistant Vice Chancellor for Diversity and Academic Inclusive Excellence, Gioconda Guerra Perez, nominated Hernandez for the Immigration Forum Award. Perez told the group Hernandez has been active in several organizations on campus, among them La Colectiva, an organization that focuses on challenges faced by immigrant students and helps raise scholarship funds. Hernandez also has been active in the outreach activities of the Society of Hispanic Professional Engineers, and she is now working as a graduate student liaison and mentor for DACA/undocumented students on campus. For DACA students, it is extremely difficult to find financial resources to pay for their education. However, Carmen has overcome so many obstacles and barriers to achieve higher education that inspires me every single day, Perez said in her nomination. Hernandez recalls the struggles she experienced during her freshman year at the UI, and she's looking to make it easier for the undergraduates she's mentoring, she said. "Being in this position, I'm able to give back to students," she said. The community and the university are also in a position to help Hernandez said. One resource that has helped her at the UI has been La Casa Cultural Latina, she said. The UI could help more by making more resources available for those immigrant students who can't get financial aid, she said. The community could help by learning more and gaining a better understanding about students in her position, she said. There are also some scholarship funds that could use a hand. Everyone has a different struggle, but even $5 can help, she said. And a CU salute. The CU Immigration Forum will be giving out 5 awards in a ceremony set for 3:30 p.m. Saturday at the Urbana Public Library. The awards recognize contributions made by people, businesses, and organizations creating welcoming environments for immigrants in Champaign-Urbana. In addition to Carmen Hernandez, honorees will include Diva Nails and its owners, Annie and Kevin Noyan, Business Leadership Award. Carl Community Care and Neighborhood Health Programs and Juliana Sellett, Vice President of Community Health Initiatives, Community Impact Award. Rosea Alhiti and Mike Doyle, Distinguished Leadership Service Award. Luis Cusa and Luzolo Jean Cesar Netadica, Leadership Award. And next is a piece from the University of Illinois Foundation, and it's called Fiscal Year Set UI's Record for Fundraising. Meeting today will reveal total, by Julie Worth, Urbana. More than 650 donors are converging on campus for the annual University of Illinois Foundation Weekend to celebrate what is described as a record year for UI fundraising. Bolstered by a $150 million gift from entrepreneur Larry Geis and his wife Beth to the College of Business, the UI pulled in a record amount of new donations, grants, pledges, and commitments during the fiscal year that ended June 30th, said President Tim Killeen and others. The total will be announced today at the annual business meeting of the UI Foundation at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. It's an all-time high number, Killeen said Wednesday. It's an important part of our budget. The UI is in the midst of its largest fundraising campaign to date and has raised $1.75 billion towards its $3.1 billion goal, or about 56%, officials said. The total includes all 3 campuses in the UI system. The goal for the Urbana campus is $2.25 billion. Among its fundraising targets are UI Athletics with a goal of $300 million and the new Carl Illinois College of Medicine. The Geis, and I'm pronouncing this Geis, it is spelled G-I-E-S. The Geis gift was the largest in the UI's history and one of the largest ever to a business school. The college is now known as the Geis College of Business. The UI launched the public phase of the campaign last fall, but had been quietly raising money since 2014. The campaign will run through 2022. Meanwhile, the foundation has created a registered charity in England in an effort to get more donations for alumni in the United Kingdom and Europe. The UI Foundation UK Limited, created in 2016, is now fully operational and has a website at uif.org/UK, according to the foundation. It was set up to allow UI alumni and friends there to support higher education and maximize the value of their charitable support through tax incentives available in the UK and other European countries, the foundation's website says. The UI says it has more than 727,000 alumni worldwide and 9,100 friends of the university in Europe and the United Kingdom, including 4,200 alumni. The new entity is recognized by the Charity Commission for England and Wales as a registered charity and is part of a dual qualified charitable structure recognized by the U.S. Internal Revenue Service as a tax-exempt organization. Gifts made to the foundation are tax-deductible for U.S. taxpayers and also provide tax benefits to U.K. taxpayers, including potential income tax and capital gains tax relief, the website says. The new foundation has also applied to become part of Transnational Giving Europe, a network of philanthropic institutions. The website also gives alumni information about UI news related to the United Kingdom of Europe. The University of Illinois system is truly a global enterprise, James Moore, president and CEO of the foundation, said in a release. We are proud to now have a stake in the ground in the UK and Europe to advance the mission of our great universities and to also more easily connect with our friends and alumni in their communities. Foundation Weekend kicked off Thursday with a reception at the Guy's College of Business. Guests were to attend a breakfast at Cranert this morning before the business meeting, and then lunches outlining the fundraising campaigns for the Urbana and Chicago campuses. The weekend also includes the second annual Hall of Fame induction ceremony on Saturday, honoring 21 athletes and coaches from the UI Division of Intercollegiate Athletics, including former basketball coach Lou Henson, Illini basketball stars Kendall Kill and David Downey, football greats Dana Howard and Jim Grabowski, soccer player Tara Herless, and others. The annual meeting will include a fireside chat about the effect of donating money for scholarships, featuring Nicole Evans, a former student and UI softball player, and donors M. Christine Schwartz, who has given to the UI Chicago College of Nursing, and Anthony Petullo, who has donated to the Urbana campus. And we'll turn now to the opinions page, and we'll begin with an editorial called Homeowners Taking a Hit. Illinoisans are facing core problems that their elected officials are failing to address. The Illinois Policy Institute recently released a study of housing ownership that is disappointing in at least two respects. The study concluded that Illinois ranked 48 out of all 50 states in terms of improvements in the user cost of homeownership and now has the 8th highest cost of homeownership in the nation, up from 25th highest in the pre-housing bubble period. For every $100 in home value in Illinois, homeowners are now paying $10.15 in annual costs associated with owning their home, more than in 42 other states. The study stated that these findings are of particular importance for low-income families in Illinois, since higher costs associated with home ownership have a disproportionate negative effect on low-income households. It attributed part of Illinois' ongoing problem of more people leaving the state than moving into home ownership issues. That is indisputably bad news. But compounding the problem is that Illinois' decline is a relatively recent trend. Prior to the burst of the housing bubble in 2007 through 8, Illinois ranked in the middle in terms of the costs of home ownership. The state clearly is headed in the wrong direction, and the pain isn't restricted to homeowners. Even renters have experienced drastic negative effects. In the post-recession period, the median rent has increased 24% in Illinois. It is noteworthy that the median rent increased by 24% while the user cost of home ownership remained virtually unchanged, and home values decreased by 0.5% over the same time period. One explanation could be that potential homeowners, discouraged by high property taxes and low home price appreciation, are instead choosing to rent, thus contributing to the increase in rental prices, the IPI reports. Just as concerning, however, is unwillingness of the political class in this state to address the problem. The IPI, a free market think tank with offices in Chicago and Springfield, attributed part of the problem to increasing income and property taxes. Yet state and local officials have done nothing about property taxes. While J.B. Pritzker, the Democrat candidate for governor and likely the state's next chief executive, is running on a pledge to increase the state's income tax. At the same time, property taxes are increasing and going to support public employee pensions, not services. No responsible state official has shown much interest in that problem either. So it's the worst of both worlds, a growing problem that is being ignored. The 14-page report, which is available on the IPI website, makes a strong case for the benefits of home ownership to individual property owners and the communities in which they live. But one of the traditional benefits of home ownership, rising value, allowing people to sell it for more than they bought it, has slowed dramatically in this state. At the same time, the cost of owning a home has increased. The bottom line, according to the report, is that owning a home in Illinois has become less attractive than in most U.S. states. Measuring home ownership costs point to one simple fact. Housing in Illinois has become less attractive relative to housing in other U.S. states. This has been driven largely by increases in income taxes and property taxes. There is no reprieve to be found for Illinoisans, homeowners or renters. With greater housing costs, it is not surprising that the post-recession growth in home values has been suppressed in Illinois relative to the rest of the U.S. This is more painful for homeowners since home appreciation has yet to match the pre-housing bubble period, the report states. Politicians who are constantly talking about their desire to assist the middle class and working families need to focus on this insidious problem. And we'll turn to the From Our Readers section. We'll begin with a piece written by Gerald D. Fry of Urbana called Don't Bury UI Volleyball Stories. To quote the News Gazette's own Bob M. Asmussen, the best team on the Illinois campus right now is women's volleyball. To bury the story on page 8 in Sunday's sports section about the 8th-ranked team in the country, Illinois, beating the 10th-ranked team in the country, Creighton, in 4 sets is an outrage. It's clear to me that Asmussen is right in his assessment. So, please give the best team on the Illinois campus its due with better positioning of coverage in your sports section. They deserve it. Again, that was written by Gerald D. Fry of Urbana. The next piece is written by Belden Fields of Urbana and is called U.S. Healthcare, Pay More, Get Less. The United States, with its private corporate system, is the only Western industrialized country where millions go without health insurance. In France, the per capita expenditure on universal public health care was $4,600 in 2016. In the United States, it was $10,348. And the French are healthier than Americans on a number of dimensions. In 2014, French infant mortality among live births was 3.5 per 1,000. In the U.S., it was 5.8. In 2017, the average life expectancy in France was 82.4 years. In the U.S., it was 78.8. So, we pay more and get less. The most tragic lesson in the deficiency of the American system, for me, was the loss of a close American friend who lived in Paris for over a decade, during which she developed cancer. Because she was a legal resident, her chemo, radiation, hospital stays, drugs, and even her wigs were completely covered by the French healthcare system. After she was denied a renewal of French residency, she came back to the U.S., but could not afford the periodic checkups and treatment that she had gotten free of charge in France. She died in her 40s. We don't have to be living and dying like this. House Bill 676, proposed in the U.S. House of Representatives, offers a single-payer Medicare for all system. A majority of both Republicans and Democrats support such a system, but neither Rodney Davis nor Betsy Londrigan have committed to supporting this bill. They need to be pushed to do so. And that again is written by Belden Fields of Urbana. The next piece is written by Mark C. Medlin of Champaign and is called Assertions on Shooting Wrong. Once again, the News Gazette publishes columnists whose opinions are nothing more than fish wrap. The latest is Sundiata Chajua and his continuing belief that everything that the police do that he disagrees with is racially biased. In his column on August 5th, he opines that the recent shooting on the University of Illinois campus was a result of good policing based upon the fact that the suspect was shot in the leg after officers fired several shots. 33 shots were fired by officers and 32 missed. The officers were attempting to stop the threat but missed 32 times, resulting in one shot to the leg. Chajua would have us believe that if this was a black male, the police would have shot the individual to kill him rather than to wound him. I have noted that shortly after this shooting, a suspect was shot by law enforcement in Monroe County, Indiana, in the leg. That suspect died seconds later due to his non-lethal leg injury. So much for his assertion as to what a non-lethal wound is. This case was sad all around, as it was a young man in crisis who tried to have the police kill him. It was made even worse by this columnist's assertion that it all was all race-based. Nothing could have been further from the truth, but for some, as Chajua shows, truth really does not matter. Sad. Again, that's written by Mark Medlin of Champaign. And we'll turn now to the history section. And in area history, in 1918, an Indian princess named Wadahawas, an accomplished mezzo-soprano, appeared and sang in her native costume at Champaign High School. In 1968, the new Anderson Grain Elevator in Champaign announced it would open its doors for corn deliveries on October 1st. In 2003, John Boutier threw for a career high and Memorial Stadium record 430 yards and tossed three touchdowns, but Illinois still lost 31-24 to California. And we'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Friday, September 21st, 2018 edition of the News Gazette. I'm Sandra Ferguson. Please stay tuned.